Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. And it is Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. The time is currently 1:33 p.m. Members present, we have Representative LeBon, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Johnston, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And on today's agenda, we will be hearing HB 306, which is Permanent Fund Dividend Appropriations and Earnings Reserve, HB 300, which is Permanent Fund Appropriations from the Earnings Reserve. And I will begin this meeting and then hand the gavel over to Co-Chair Johnston after she briefly introduces the first bill, which is HB 306. And so with that, I'd like to invite Representative Kopp and Representative Johnston to the table. And if you could both put yourselves on the record. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I think on a sunny day, the view's much better from here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me a few minutes to join our colleague, Representative Kopp, in presenting House Bill 306. I'm Jennifer Johnston. I represent District 28, which is a hillside down to Turnagain, down to Portage Glacier in Anchorage. House Bill 306 builds on the work of the Permanent Fund Working Group and continues the conversation seeking a sustainable permanent fund for future generations. It was an honor to be co-chair of the Permanent Fund Working Group with Senator Bishop, which was made up of four members of the House, four members of the Senate, and include Representative Merrick and Representative Wool. While we didn't all come to agreement on the ideal PFD amount, we all agreed the permanent fund needs to be protected from every effects of inflation and it needs to grow. The majority of the committee agreed we needed to live within the rules framework of SB 26, or the percent of market value. I'd also like to remind you of yesterday's testimony from Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill. If you remember, on page 5, he had on the third bullet, it said structure. A statutory solution to the PFD is important to reduce the annual fiscal uncertainty. So this is just starting this conversation on how do we address that structure and how do we start moving away from the uncertainty that we've had for a number of years. During that process, back to the Permanent Fund Working Group, during the process, we modeled many different scenarios. None of the scenarios that the Permanent Fund Working Group modeled completely eliminated the deficit. But the scenario that is proposed in House Bill 306 came the closest at the time. However, I'm sure all of you are aware, the current fiscal outlook with world markets has changed somewhat dramatically over the last couple of days. So I look forward to our conversations in House Finance as we're looking in today's market and as we're looking at the future. Like our recent conversations on the House floor regarding HCR 13, common ground is most often found on the topic of ensuring that the permanent fund is protected for future generations. Thank you for the latitude to give this introduction. I will now hand over to my friend and colleague, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Chuck Kopp, House District 24 Representative, which is south of Diamond Boulevard in Anchorage and west of the old Seward Highway in the Campbell Lake, Bayshore, Ocean View, Clap Road area. I have joined with me my team member, Grace Irvine. Grace, should I slide over one for you? Okay. So, Madam Chair, if you will, I would like to just go through the slides and just give an overview of the bill.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. So we're grateful to the Permanent Fund Working Group. It's the first thing I'd like to say, because the work that they did this interim showed it got us to the point we're at today. And it showed that we can reach consensus on such an important topic like protecting the permanent fund. The goals for Alaska, which we highlight briefly here, are shared goals. Communities that are healthy and safe, a private sector that keeps our economy growing, a government that upholds our laws and works through its business efficiently, and a strong growing permanent fund. Why protect the permanent fund? We see historically what it's done from its original $734,000 deposit in 1977 to $68 billion as of a few days ago. Probably have to have an update on that, but it's grown a lot. The House recently discussed all these principles, the growth of the fund, the sustainable draw, and fiscal solvency and our state's creditworthiness recently on the House floor. And the fund can feel kind of ephemeral at times, but it can be helpful to discuss the ways outside of paying a PFD that it has played into our shared history. We feel this is an opportunity to celebrate the fund's success, recognizing that the permanent fund will continue to have a major impact on Alaskan life. This slide, slide five, illustrates the goals that we set earlier and demonstrates how the permanent fund has helped us reach those goals. Whenever we hear concerns about the percent of market value being a raid or a theft, I think we can point to these outcomes. Earnings have helped us respond to the opioid epidemic, the rise in crime, the 2018 earthquake, last year's wildfire season. Earnings have allowed Alaska's tax burden to remain low, despite the drop in oil prices. And the percent of market value has acted as the most effective spending cap we've seen in decades. These accomplishments further underscore our need to keep the fund strong. So how have we been funding the services? This chart takes us funding state services, I mean. This chart starts with 1912 through the beginning of statehood, and it shows where we were at from 1912 through today and how the fund's earnings have become integral to keep our state running. I think we'd all be interested to see what tomorrow will look like. We see how we started with industry taxes and income tax, lots of oil beginning in 1977, oil revenue, and then, of course, income tax repealed in 1980. And we rode that all the way to 2013 when the oil price dropped dramatically. And the state responded, cutting billions of dollars in the operating budget to where we are today. And we're still in need of addressing the mathematical tension in our budget with the dividend and the percent of market value draw. Next slide. So deposits into the permanent fund have allowed it to grow. We're certainly celebrating that. We know that that's a combination of the mineral royalties and the non-royalty legislative appropriations plus inflation proofing that have caused it to grow to roughly $66.7 billion. And I think it's important to see that the legislatures that came before us understood the importance of growing this fund in the long term, and they did that at the expense of short-term benefits through appropriations. So how does the percent of market value work? We all get this question a lot, and just for a review, the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation calculates the total value of the permanent fund, principal and earnings, and they calculate 5.25% of the value over the first five of the last 6 years. We know that's set at 5.25% for FY19 through 21, and then 5% thereafter. That amount becomes the maximum amount the state can spend from the earnings reserve account. And the legislature appropriates that to pay for dividends and state services. So in addition to the appropriations we make to the principal, there is more that we can do to support the fund's strength. We can support the percent of market value structure, abide by it. We can pay out a dividend that is affordable. We can support the work of the corporation and work with them to recruit and retain great investors. And I know, Madam Co-Chair, you have done a lot with helping the corporation be able to recruit and retain some of the best investors in the country, which Alaska has benefited from. And we can protect the fund from inflation through inflation proofing. Next slide. Yeah. So why do we need to take action today? I guess we all know why. We know we have kicked the can down the road long enough, and that's not any blame at anyone's feet, but we, we realize that we are in a position now where we have nearly exhausted our savings. And with oil at such low prices, we cannot expect oil prices to bail us out of a $1.5 billion structural deficit. Any new revenues would not solve our deficit this year. We know that oil, I think today, is around $34 a barrel. And the forecast indicates it's heading into the 20s. So this brings us to this slide. Why change our statutes? There's a mathematical tension between the revenues and the costs. This is why we make the change in the statute, because of the gap that's illustrated here. We see our revenue picture paired with our expense picture in the governor's FY21 budget and the size of the gap necessary to pay the statutory dividend. This gap does cause unnecessary stress and uncertainty across our state. We've seen attempts to reduce the gap with $1.5 billion in cuts and cost shifting, and it didn't work well. We heard from all of our communities that were asked to absorb the costs or to have their share of the petroleum property tax or the shared fisheries tax clawed back to the state. We saw how that devastated those communities and what was necessary to pay this full dividend. If that gap appears next year, we will have no savings to fill that gap. And again, as you said, Madam Co-Chair, I'm grateful to Deputy Commissioner Barnhill for underscoring this issue yesterday in his presentation. And there's one additional point. You know, according to Fitch Ratings, which is one of the three largest credit rating agencies in the country other than Moody's and Standard & Poor's, they said that our desire to pay a full statutorily calculated PFD elevates the state's fixed cost burden and reduces its ability to respond to future economic weakness as revenue growth is expected to be modest. So we are living in a future economic weakness. The coronavirus, the downward spiral of oil, we are living in that moment right now. That statement was made only about 5 or 6 months ago by Fitch. So this is our status quo of where we're at now with our situation, and it illustrates how much is left unknown if no change is made this year. So you see this top dotted line is a budget with a statutory PFD and what the gap would be between the budget less dividends. So it's a pretty significant gap. This year, $1.5 billion would be required to balance the budget. And next year, we could spend the remaining $500 million in savings and still have over $1 billion deficit. So every year, that leaves us with a gap that exceeds our savings and would result in a crippling tax burden. So House Bill 306, elements of this plan, this information has led us to the introduction of the bill in front of you. We've tried to keep this as straightforward as possible. There's just two elements of this plan, an 80-20 split of the percent of market value, and the rest of the plan goes into this permanent fund task force to review the effectiveness within 6 years. We came up with 6 years because it took us from 2014 to now to evaluate where we're at. We think with a structural plan, a six-year review would also be good. So this is how the 80-20 POMV split would work. From the draw, $3.1 billion in FY21, 80% goes to fund state obligations, education, public safety, transportation, 20% going to dividends.
Representative Cox, yes. Do you want questions throughout this, or would you rather wait to the end?
Madam Chair, however you would like to do it, I'm comfortable if a question arises, pausing.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. On the previous slide, as we looked at the POMV split and then had brief discussion on the Permanent Fund Task Force, I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom of how we came to the 80-20 formula that is before us. My understanding is that the task force had many different proposals that were presented to the chair, and so how did we come to this formula?
Actually,
or Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Kopp, I these are two different things. We were in a working group,
right?
And this task force is actually part of the bill to be 6 years from now.
Okay. Well, I apologize, Madam Co-Chair, but that's what I'm trying to get at is, would the Permanent Fund Working Group then Is this the result of that working group, or is this something that has been formed independently?
So through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, much of the working group's effort and review of where we're at is incorporated in this bill. Now, as far as the nuance of the 80-20 split, this is a starting point for the conversation as Representative Johnston laid out in her conversation. We're gonna see some modeling that you can look at the split many different ways, but the bill starts here because under the scenarios that were available to us at the time the bill rolled out, it's the one that works for Alaska, and we'll see that when we get to the modeling.
Well, and if I could just quickly follow up, I know, for example, my Mat-Su representative, what they brought forward was very different from this, and I'm just trying to see who is the author of this. Is that you, Madam Co-Chair?
Representative Sullivan Leonard was, you know, co-chair of the Permanent Fund Working Group. This was one of the scenarios that we modeled in that, and this is one of the few scenarios that gave us a glide path of sustainability.
Okay, and so who was it that brought that forward?
Actually, the Rules Committee, and I am vice chair of the Rules Committee, so it's Representative Kopp and myself.
Right, I'm not trying to interrogate, I'm just trying to get kind of to the basis of who brought this forward. Was it, you know, Senator Bishop? Was it his group that brought it forward? Was it another group? Because you kind of had people tasked to work on different
models. No, this is what we brought forward, Representative Kopp, myself, and the Rules Committee, a majority of the Rules Committee brought this forward from the result of the work. What was brought forward with the Permanent Fund Working Group were two things. One, that we needed to maintain the structured draw, work within the confines of the structured draw. And secondly, that we all agreed on the modeling that came out of the Permanent Fund Working Group. Now, I have to say, in those modelings, what we use for the modeling does not necessarily, but we can put the numbers in of the last week into it, but it might not have all the nuances that we have going on right now in the worldwide market.
So thank you, through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, thank you for the question. This is informed by the group, but this is authored by me with the assistance of Representative Johnston. Yeah, yes, and I'm proud to be the author, so I'll be very direct on that. So focus on the Permanent Fund Task Force, which has been incorporated into this this bill, would include the review and evaluation after 6 years of the fund and the PFD. The task force is formed with 3 House members, 3 senators, and an appointee of the governor. The task force is charged with giving Alaskans a performance review for House Bill 306 and the Permanent Fund. So how has the plan worked? How has it affected the Permanent Fund? Is it still sustainable? We want them to evaluate these same things that we ourselves have been evaluating since 2014. Is a change necessary? 2026 was chosen so that legislators would have a full 2-year legislature to consider the recommendations. That would be the 35th legislature. So this slide deals with state budget impact, showing how the plan performs. These graphs were produced by Legislative Finance to illustrate the plan's performance under the House's FY21 budget. Legislative Finance will be in front of the committee during consideration of this bill and can get into more detail, but at a high level, you can see the significant difference between the status quo and the budget gap you saw earlier and House Bill 306. While a modest draw from savings would need to occur, that gap is far more easily filled with reductions or revenues than the $1.5 billion gap represented under the status quo slide. Our savings also have a much longer life, a glide path, than if we did nothing. So this slide shows, let's see, state savings impacts? Okay. Our dividend impacts. I may have skipped over a slide. We're good here. That one. So this slide, go back one, to the one that shows the growth. Yeah, this slide shows the actual growth of the earnings reserve under House Bill 306. That while the CBR does give us about a six-plus-year glide path to look at new revenues and spending reductions, the earnings reserve does grow under this scenario. This next slide shows exactly what the difference is between the traditional statutory formula dividend and the dividend under the current scenario offered by House Bill 306. You can see that the bill, the dividend is roughly $900, and the next slide will show how that pairs up with the historical PFD amounts. The dark line is the dividend amount each year. You can see how volatile it's been, and you can see where the average dividend has been in there, and that gives you an idea of what. And I would say this slide demonstrates the past PFD amounts in nominal dollars, and it also demonstrates the extreme volatility of the dividend, which we've seen over the years. So this next slide we produced to just show and be really clear what the difference is between what Alaskans have received in years past as an average and House Bill 306. It's popular to throw out the numbers of what a statutory PFD could be, but I think it's more realistic to compare this amount to what has previously been given to Alaskans. There is a $270 difference in this bill compared to historic amounts. So House Bill 306 moves us forward. It's a path toward being able to plan for our state's future instead of living in a crisis mode. This bill unlocks our ability to improve our credit ratings, stabilize our PFD amounts, stabilize our budget processes, and ultimately have a true understanding of our budget picture. We have begun every budget process since the drop in oil prices in near bedlam. Madam Chair, I'll say that again. We have begun every budget process since the drop in oil prices in near bedlam. And when every year is met with the possibility of a government shutdown, mass layoffs, or new taxes, nobody wins. So here we're looking at a built-in baseline from which to work and a set of shared facts about the budget outlook. The bill does not take anything off the table except overspending our permanent fund earnings reserve and eroding our children's future. So the decisions to be made are listed right here, our spending priorities, sustainability of the dividend and the fund, and other revenue options. These decisions accurately reflect the fiscal options before us today. Are we willing to continue this budget debate year after year? Are we interested in raising taxes to pay for dividends, which will become necessary as soon as 2021 due to our minimal savings? Or are we willing to make decisions today that, while difficult, allow for not only the preservation of our permanent fund and the dividend, but provide economic stability and community security? So the question before the committee is, what is the highest and best use of our fund? Is it an ATM from which we draw when we feel we need money? And do we consider it a legacy to be left to future Alaskans? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? And we've been joined by Representative Knopp. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Knopp, for bringing forward this proposal. As you say, if nothing else, it starts the conversation. It's a much needed conversation. In your decision to move this particular proposed PFD split, POMB split, was there any consultation with economists to try to get a sense of the impact of the lesser PFD amount on the economy overall, and what the impact of having less dollars put in the hands of all Alaskans across the state, how that might impact the economy?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, so certainly we're well aware of reports that have been authored, information that's been given to the legislature that shows what a reduced dividend amount could mean across Alaska. Some of those reports I think did not include increased state services, though. To balance out that debt. In other words, there's many communities in Alaska that are small and the numbers of people collectively are just a very small percent of the state services they get. But in order to pay a full PFD, you have to pretty much wipe out the services that they're receiving, and we've seen that. So we, but we did consider the information that has already been put out on the record as far as the, what the dividend means to the economy. Thank you.
And I'm not sure one of the reports that you are making reference to is the ISA report. And one of the interesting things on the ISA report is when it was done, and it was actually done way before we had this massive growth in the fund itself and massive growth in the dividend. And I think that's something that we do forget. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned the taxes word in your presentation. So under this model, would we be leading with the PFD amount, that 20% of the percent of market value formula? So funding the PFD would be the first budget decision we make, and then everything else would follow?
Through the chair, so Representative Lebon, thank you for that question. So what the formula would do, it would give us a baseline to start from. We would know the money available for state services and what was going to go to the dividend. And it would, that seems to be what keeps us here 4, 5, 6 months a year, is that not being resolved in any realistic way, and trying to reconcile the plummeting energy market as far as oil prices and our ability to balance the budget under those circumstances. So I would say structurally, you could say, yeah, it's the first thing, and the bill tackles the hardest thing first. But I think it would free up the bandwidth in the building then to address the entire budget to see what is our true deficit. The $1.5 billion deficit we know is only related to the statutory PFD. I should say only. It's tied in with all of our state agency spending and everything. But we know that the dividend itself is nearly twice as large as our largest state agency. So it's a significant cost factor, and the bill addresses that issue head on.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the vision that I can see, particularly with the reduced price of oil and declining throughput and that perfect storm that we're experiencing economically, is a day where we're paying a $900 PFD to all Alaskans that are eligible, and also clawing back a state income tax to help pay for it. Is that a reality? Is that a real possibility in this?
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, in any scenario where we're paying a dividend, if we don't have the money to pay a dividend, we could be in trouble. So, we could, in other words, there's no safe formula that can predict what we're seeing right now in the market. And even though we have a 5-year average where we 5 of the previous 6 years, it's based on that average. Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation calculates the value. Of course, this year is probably going to shape up to be a tough year. Can you get that for me? Yeah, thank you. I think the point you're making, Representative Blonde, if I hear you correctly, is that there is, it's hard to come up with any formula that can predict accurately what we're seeing today. If we're truly paying a dividend based on our ability to pay it, then we would have to stay with just a legislative appropriation approach, which is where we're at today.
And one last question, then I'll let other folks have a turn. Thank you, Madam Chair. I could see the day coming where if we're locked in on this 20% of the 5% of market value, that we would then be faced with the decision to overdraw the percent of market value, pull more from the earnings reserve than that formula Senate Bill 26 would call for, and or incorporate a state income tax to fund the PFD. If we're leading with the PFD, then you have to figure out a way to make that happen. And if it means you tax, overdraw the earnings reserve, or cut other agency spending, we're putting the PFD at the very tip of the mountain.
And I just want to mention to all committee members, we will be having the models tomorrow where we can ask more in-depth questions as far as this. Representative Carpenter.
Hey, Madam Chair, just so that I can clarify some assumptions that we've taken here with regards to slide 12 and slide 16, if you could. Both of them are kind of the revenue versus spending projections. And in our packet, we've got a document that looks like this, but it's not included in the presentation here. So we're using what forecast to generate the revenue bars on these two slides?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, we're using the forecast that was available to us when this was put together just about 2 weeks ago. So oil was looking better then. It was mid-50s barrel, yeah.
So it's a fall forecast is what's listed on here. And the trend line for the solid black line, which is the budget less dividends, if I may, is a what percent increase over time?
I will defer to my team member, Grace.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, for the record, Grace Irvin, staff to Representative Kopp. Ledge Finance will be in front of you tomorrow. Obviously, the slides, even put together a week ago, no longer reflect the reality that might be seen, for one, with the House budget and also with what we know to be different forecasts coming forward. So I would defer those questions to Wednesday.
Okay. And the paper that's included in here says it's about 2.25%, which would be inflation, growing with the rate of inflation. So I'd just like to point out, I have my own chart sitting here, and I think the numbers that we're going to find for fiscal year 21 are about $700 million revenue for this. So it changes drastically what we're seeing today.
And thank you, Representative Carpenter. I think we're all quite aware that we have a new day coming.
Yeah. Just one last follow-up, if I may, just a comment. There's a theme here that is really important for us to recognize, and I appreciate the opportunity to have the discussion. We say many times we need to be able to pay a PFD that we can afford, but that same logic, that same train of thought also applies to the state spending. We need to have state spending levels that we can afford. And so if we're going to talk about new revenue, we're going to talk about eating up a PFD, then we ought to be intellectually honest and say we got to talk about our spending levels as well. Thank you.
Madam Chair, through the chair, thank you, Representative Carpenter. And yourself and Representative LeBron, I think both touched on something very important in that this is only one, it's a very important piece, but it's one piece of a sustainable fiscal plan that does involve controlling our expenditures and also looking at new revenues. And both of you touched on that, so thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much for your presentation. Next, we'll be going to House Bill 300, an act relating to deposits into the dividend fund and income of an appropriation from the earning reserve account relating to community assistance program and providing for effective date. And this will be bill introduced by Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Representative Adam Wohl from District 5 in Fairbanks. I'd like to ask my staff member Stephanie Andrew to come up and join me in case I get into a corner I can't get out of. And I'd like to thank the previous presenter for softening up the audience here a little bit and laying down some good groundwork for the situation that we're in, so I don't have to go over it all. And certainly members of Finance Committee have heard many presentations, including one as recently as yesterday, about the POMV draw and the situation we're in. I'll get a little closer. And the situation we need to resolve. I've been down in Juneau. This is my third term, my sixth year. And as Representative Kopp pointed out, we spend many, many months trying to solve this dilemma that we're in, balancing revenue with expenditures and the PFD is very much a part of that. So I have a PowerPoint. I don't have as many graphs from Ledge Finance today, but tomorrow we will go over some of those. And as you'll see, the plan I'm presenting is definitely a conversation starter. It's perhaps a novel way to look at the PFD, the PONV draw, and so on and so forth. So I will start the slideshow. PONV structure provides a stable funding stream, supports state government. It was a historic compromise when we passed that bill, and it was really a paradigm shift for the state of Alaska. And it was one that we were forced into, but we were in a tight position where revenue declined very quickly, and we needed to make some cuts. And we made cuts on the capital budget, the operating budget, some severe cuts over the first few years. And the PFD was first vetoed by Governor Walker at the time to 50% of the statutory formula. The next 2 years, or the next year, the legislature passed that same amount. And then since then, we've basically grabbed a number that we thought was something we could afford, something that was acceptable. And that number's been $1,600. The year before that, it was $1,100, which was 50% of the formula at the time. Then the last couple of years have been $1,600. So we went from an economy that was paid for by oil. Oil paid the whole state budget for many, many years. And the permanent fund paid the PFD. And those two things were separate. When oil declined, we had to tap into the permanent fund to pay for state budget. And that's the new world we're in. We have a structured draw, which is 5.25%, which is going to drop down to 5% in 2022, as was mentioned. But the bill that we got from the Senate was stripped down, and it didn't include a formula for the new PFD, and also it didn't remove the old PFD statute. And that's what we're running up against now, is that everyone says, well, follow the law, we have a formula. Well, the formula would call for a $3,000 PFD, which, by the way, has never been paid. We've never paid a $3,000 PFD. We had a supplemental check 1 year during the Palin years when times were particularly good and oil prices were particularly high. That helped the state budget, but that hurt a lot of people trying to heat their homes. And so it was basically a supplemental heating check, and there was different ways they were trying to get that money to people, especially in rural Alaska where heating oil was extremely expensive. Even the interior where I live, it was over $4 a gallon, and heating bills were going through the roof. So they basically just gave everyone an extra $1,200, I believe. The following year, that was taken away. And I think people were happy to get it. When it went away, they totally understood that too. So that was the main thing. We didn't include a new formula, and we didn't delete the old one. So we haven't been following the old formula, and everyone is calling for a new formula, whether you're in the whatever side of the aisle, even the executive branch is calling for a new formula. So the amount available for the general fund equals the total PMB draw less whatever's appropriated for the permanent fund dividends. So as long as the PFD remains subject to intensive annual debate, the state cannot depend on predictable revenue stream. So we need predictability in our revenue, although, as we all know, the last few weeks have really thrown that into turmoil. Our oil revenue, which had been declining consistently and steadily for decades, although the price of oil has fluctuated, the production has been declining. And now the price in 2014 went down, and now it went down again. So we know we can't rely on this volatile source. I mean, we use it as revenue, but the POMV is a much more stable force, stable revenue source. So we're going to start with some assumptions here. The budget proposal of $4.6 billion is approximately what we passed. The revenue forecast is $2 billion fall 2019, but I believe that's going to be readjusted here real soon. And even the forecast that we got in this committee was saying that next year was going to be lower anyways, and now it's going to be considerably lower. And right now there's no real new revenue. There's a motor fuel tax in the works. There's some other smaller taxes and revenue sources, but there's no broad-based income tax or sales tax. So we have a few options, and many of these we went over in the working group. And the governor's plan, which is a full statutory dividend, is a $3,000 dividend, which is about $2 billion, or $1.9 to fully implement. There's a 50-50 plan that's been kicked around last year and this year as well, which would be about a $2,400 dividend, and it's about that would have a deficit of $1.1 billion. There's a two-thirds, one-third, which is a $1,600 dividend, which is about what we've done the last few years, which also would add to a deficit. And there's a surplus plan, which at one point was a $700 dividend. I don't believe that's the case right now. But there's problems with the surplus plan. So what I'm proposing is an allocation model, which hasn't really been used. And I'm sort of combining different ideas that I've acquired. I didn't invent this whole model, but maybe many of you have heard different concepts. I think the mayor of Anchorage mentioned doing a 45-45-10 with 10% going to the communities, 45 to government, 45 to a PFD. This is a slight variation on that with putting different priorities besides just the government and the PFD. So we start with 40% designated for K-12 education. This is $1.2 billion, which is approximately what we've been funding this year. This basically sets it in statute that education funding is a percentage of the POMV. The first two lines of this, and then 10% would be for the University of Alaska, which is $310 million with the current POMV draw, which was about what we funded. Last year was $302 million that we funded. So it's approximately last year's budget. And again, these two things are education. They're both in the Constitution. I believe they both need to be supported. And I think putting it in formula guarantees that these two entities won't have to come down here and wonder what they're going to get for funding every year. They'll be set in statute, and they can work with that. And these two things, I think, are really important to grow Alaska's future, is a good educational foundation. Other states that have faced tough times have doubled down their investment in education. It keeps our young people staying in Alaska and getting both primary and higher education here. I designated 10% for capital projects, which would be about double what we've been doing. Lately, we've been doing the bare minimum just to get the federal match, which is about $150 million. This would double that to $300 million. That's the other thing we constantly hear down here in Juneau, is groups saying, we need a capital budget. We need jobs. We need work. We're losing our talented workforce. They're leaving the state. They're getting jobs elsewhere, and they're not returning. So we definitely need a capital budget. Also, we need to build our infrastructure, roads, bridges. All these kinds of things are declining, and we need to maintain them. Deferred maintenance is a huge burden. The university alone has $1 billion in deferred maintenance. The state has quite a bit of deferred maintenance, and we have to address it. The remaining 30% would be split 50-50, 15% to the general fund and 15% permanent fund dividends. Now, and I know at first blush this is even lower than the previous presentation of 80-20. But the community dividend is going to offset some of that cut, and we'll show you why here. Let me go ahead to the graph I had. So here it is in graphical layout. With 40% to education, you have the university, the community dividend, and the split at the bottom of 30% split in half. Now, there are variations I have done on this, so that 30% instead of going 15-15 could be split 20-10, so we could get a 20% POMV. But I think it's really important to go back to the community dividend portion, and I'll right here. So, yes, the problem with the surplus dividend, as was mentioned earlier, is that no one knows what it's going to be, and there's fear that there'll be more spending, which will make the PFD smaller. So, it's agreed upon that we do need a statutory dividend, and I guess I'm backtracking a little bit there. But if we went to a 20% POMV instead of the 15-15, instead of 20-10, it would be about $900 and something, $966 is a close approximation, which is similar to the 80-20 bill. So community dividend, some form of the community dividend is in place since 1969. The formula has been changed several times. The current formula distributes $30 million per year through the Community Assistance Program. This would increase it from $30 million to to $300 million, which is 10%. Again, there are variations I can explore in analysis tomorrow that change that from 10% to 5%. But right now it's $300 million. And we increase the base. Right now there's a base for a city, a borough, and an unorganized outside of a borough. So we have three designations for these communities. So we would take the 300,000 and bring that up to a million. The current base is 300,000 for a borough. We bring that up to a million. The city base would go from 75,000 to 250, and the unincorporated communities would go from 25,000 to 83, which basically we're multiplying every 10 times 3 1/3. So to go from 300,000 to a million is times 3 1/3, and we do that all the way down the line. We distribute out all the base, and then what's left over, we divide it up amongst all the people in the state, and we come up with a per capita number. And after we distribute the base, we distribute the per capita, and then we cap it at $1,200 per capita in each community. And we have a chart that shows some examples of that coming up. But this brings the funds closer to the individual. So it's not exactly a check in someone's pocket, but it's money in the community, which is closer to the individual. Now, I know Jay Hammond, I believe he said, at the time the permanent fund dividend was created, he goes, let's take the money and take it out of the state's hands and put it into the individual. They know how to spend it best. And I think that worked for a while, and people have been spending money from the dividend since its inception. And this won't eliminate a dividend, but this brings money instead of in the state coffers, it brings it to the community coffers, whether you're in Anchorage or Antioch or, you know, Fairbanks or Bethel or any community, you're going to get a pretty large quantity of money. And then the people that live there could solicit their community leaders and tell them what they needed, what's their priority, instead of the state doing it. Instead of people coming to the Capitol and saying, we need a new roof, we need a boiler, we need a loader for our landfill, we need water sewer, they could go to their local community and say, we need these things, and they would listen, they'd be responsive. And people in the community know what they need best. So, and this also would have a higher per person distribution for smaller communities. And the reason that is, if Anchorage gets a $1 million base, the per capita, once you divide up all the excess amongst all the people in Alaska, is a little over $300. So every person would get $300 in addition to the base. Now, in Anchorage, that's what they end up getting is slightly over $300 once you add the $1 million, because 300,000 people getting $1 million is a little over $3 each. So you get $3 plus the per capita of 300, they're getting slightly over $300. But in smaller communities where they get maybe 250,000 for a city or 83,000 for an unincorporated community, you divide that up amongst the population and then give everyone $300, you're easily hitting $900 to $1,200 per person. So if each person is getting $1,200 in the community dividend equivalent, plus say $700 in the PFD, that's close to $2,000 per person. Now this $1,200 per person doesn't go into their personal bank account, it goes into the community. But they can then benefit from it, whether the community wants to do an improvement, put in some energy devices, even buy some bulk fuel and sell it at a discount to its community members. They can do any of these things. So it's bringing the money closer to the community, and the rural communities, the smaller communities, will end up getting more per capita. So it somewhat offsets the problem of just straight cutting the PFD, which has the adverse effect on the smaller communities where there's much less of an economy and much less cash and jobs and so on and so forth. So it gives them more autonomy and gives the local residents voice in how the monies are spent. Now, there are increases in this over the current budget, because we're adding to the capital budget, we're adding to the university, and the community assistance program is getting quite a boost. Now, we can decrease in other areas where the state is spending. School bond debt is one thing we could pass off to the local communities, because they'd be getting quite a bit of money. And I have a complete table of every community. I put up some examples here, and those will be coming up soon. Miscellaneous municipal and university debt support. Municipal portion of PERS TERS, although I didn't go into any of those calculations, and I don't want to, I know the communities heavily advocate for us not to change that, but if Anchorage gets $90 million, you know, maybe they could afford to spend a little more on the PERS CHERS and relieve that of the state. Community block grants, things like homeless funds and shelters, this is stuff that could be done at the community level. They know what they need best, and they would have the funds to do, you know, opioid treatment, homeless shelters, these kinds of things. Public safety, more money would be available for the communities to provide some of their own public safety, especially in rural Alaska. They'd get money. They could hire a village police officer or deal with some of their public safety issues. Transportation, maintenance, transportation repair, airport. We had a bill in here, an amendment to the budget about a Quinnahock airport that couldn't afford to maintain their airport. And I believe by our calculation, Quinnahock would get, I think, $450,000 a year. So some of these monies could be used to maintain local rural airports. And, of course, there'd be savings in not paying a $1,600 PFD, which would save about $600 million. So there's some savings. There's some extra expenditures.
So Representative Telton, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, well, I just am wondering, how do you account for our ever-growing health and social services budget in your calculations, and how do you see that being administered and taken care of?
Thank you for the question, Representative Tilton, through the chair. That is a growing portion of the budget, and the remaining 15% of the POV plus the oil revenue would still be available for the other budget items. I didn't put it in the designated funds, the allocations here. I wanted to put sort of the basic prioritize, and that is a priority for sure. I didn't allocate it separately, and there would be funds. We would have to pay for it out of the budget, just like we do now.
A follow-up. So in your scenario, are you anticipating that the communities, because you're talking about the communities playing a bigger role, are you anticipating communities playing a bigger role in their services that they're providing as far as the health and social services programs and things that are provided? Are you looking at communities playing a bigger role in providing those services?
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, that isn't something we looked at, but that certainly wouldn't be off the table. It kind of depends how the numbers pan out. Certainly, Medicaid funding I wouldn't expect to go through the local communities, but there are other health costs. I mentioned sort of treatment centers or sobering center or something like that. Fairbanks has just got one of those recently. And some of those, which are health and behavioral health, could certainly be funded with the community dividend.
Follow-up?
And this is on another subject, is that all right?
I've got a couple, and then I'll come back.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Sullivan Leonard. Okay, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolf, for bringing forward this proposal. It's got a lot of merit to it. Would it's in a pie chart, but the 40% that's going to education, that would act as a pretty much a spending cap towards education as well, because you'd be limited to that 40% of the draw. There wouldn't be any other sources going to education other than that 40% under your bill. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I wasn't thinking it would be a cap. It's sort of it's a floor. That 40% of the POMV would go to education. I suppose if you wanted to put more in, you could. Same with any of these, but it would be a minimum. So you couldn't go less, but you could go more. But it would at least the education people would know we're not, you know, however that number works out to be. And in fact, 40% at current is a slight decrease of what it is right now, I believe. It's very close. But there is as projected, it will go up over time. Unlike oil prices that we can't really predict, to the extent that we can predict the POMV draw, looking at the stock market over 10 years, again, the POMV is a five-year rolling average. So even if we have a bad month or a bad year, it doesn't necessarily have as strong as an impact unless we have multiple bad years. But you can look at the graph that we have coming up, and it will show a steady increase, which I think will alleviate a lot of the anxiety that educators have, and same with some of these other entities.
Representative Telton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just more of a technical question. If you're looking at communities being more involved in this, are you looking at the way of administering this through the communities, and would there be, are you looking, I'm just looking at the, like, what are the technicalities of how you would administer this, checks going individually to people or going through communities? Because a lot of, when we send dollars, even through community assistance dollars, the, there are different administration charges that take dollars off of the top of that.
Through the chair, Representative Tilton, this would be modeled on the community assistance program that we currently have. So how the same way we disperse funds currently would be the same way in the future, just be amplified amounts.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Willett brings some, a lot of thoughts to mind. I guess the first thing I would ask, if you considered had the discussion, is the fact that in every one of the fiscal notes, it talks about designated funds, and that's really what you ask us to do. Even in your presentation, it's designated funds, which, you know, the Constitution strictly prohibits. So I'm wondering if you expect, if we went down this route, well, I mean, we could probably call it appropriation, but I guess I'm curious about a couple things. So if that, in fact, did grow over time, we're fine, but it's for the foreseeable future, say the next 5-6 years, we had down markets and that revenue dropped. And what you don't have is the biggest ticket item is our HES budget in that. And so I guess the first question I would have is, so if you consider HES budget and say we had an additional $2 billion in revenue outside of the PMV draw, and with the other states' obligations, the bond debt and other formula-driven programs and HES, is there even enough money left to cover them? And then it brings to mind if this POMV draw really declines, it wouldn't affect this year in the market, but two or three years down the road, it could be substantially less draw. Are we willing to live with that? And I think the biggest thing that comes to mind, Madam Chair, on that, Representative Wool, is if you can't bind any future legislators' hand, how are we going to put this in place and adhere to it over time is my concern.
Representative Wall.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, that's a valid point. Adhering to any statute, you know, we look at the POMV draw, SB 26, which is a 5% draw roughly. We're adhering to it. We've been adhering to it the one year, now going into two. Will we adhere to it in the future? I certainly hope so. You know, the PFD formula, we're not currently adhering to. I'd like to have it be adhered to. I'd like to adhere to SB 26. I guess if things got really bad, you could say, oh, we can't do the capital budget.
Quick follow-up, Madam Chair. And it's not really a question, Representative Wool, but when I look at this and I look at the three, you know, and the dedicated 40% and 10%, so we're dedicating the POMV draw, which in a sense I kind of like. My concern is when that number $3 billion starts to drop, and then we're no longer happy with what the university is getting, then we're going to start either adjusting this or adjusting other funds, and I see it's just trickle down effect is kind of what I see, and so just food for thought.
Yeah,
we can have that discussion a little later.
Thank you, Representative Knopp, and through the chair, a lot of this was a conversation starter, as I said earlier, and I do have another model that I didn't. Bring out today, and I got a couple more slides I should get to anyways, but you know, this could be something you can get us on the road and maybe in 5 years revisit. I did another model, like I said, that had the 40% and capital budget I put at 5%, community dividend I put at 5%, so that those were lowered, and so we have a little more flexibility if the market, we wouldn't be committed to those things. But if I may, let me proceed a couple more slides. And
please do.
Thank you. So this is the PFD amount as it's calculated with a 15% POMV, which again is lower than 20%. But right now it's 724. It goes up to almost 900 over 10 years. Education funding, which is the 40%, would be at $1.2 billion in FY21 and up to $1.5 over 10 years, so it would steadily increase. That's the 40%. And this is the 10% portion, which is capital projects, which also is university, which is 309 in 21 and goes up to 381 over time. Basically projecting what the POMV will do over time. And these are some proposed community dividends. And you'll see some are larger places that have the $1 million base, some have the $250,000 base, and some have the $83,000 base. Whoops. And you see in Anchorage, for example, the current FY20 assistance was $4.5 million. This would be $96 million. So that's a large sum of money. It ends up being $328 per person. Anchorage could certainly do a lot with that kind of money every year, including working on the port of Anchorage, for one. But certainly bond debt reimbursement and other things could be assumed. Juneau, again, is $362 per person. You get into some smaller areas. Nolato, for example, small village would be $1,200. That would hit the cap. So would Gulcana. Some are medium size that would get, St. Mary's would get the base of $83,000, would end up being $765 per person. So it helps the sort of rural-urban divide, where a larger city would get less per person, but a smaller community would get more per person, not more total, but more per person. So even though the PFD is being cut, the local communities, I think, would benefit. They'd be able to help their community members. And I guess that's the end of the show. So and tomorrow we have a lot more modeling, like I say, with a couple variations. Certainly the fall forecast is what we use, which is going to be modified real soon. I did also the version where instead of doing 10%, 10%, I did 5%, 5% to lower those designations for both the community dividend and for the capital projects. So that would put capital back at 150, which is kind of the minimum what we're doing now. Community dividend still at 150 gets a hefty amount, and we'll have those tables for you, but it's still quite a bit of money, and not trivial by any sense. So it would also help with offsetting what a PFD cut would be to rural Alaska.
I actually have one question as far as modeling for tomorrow. Could you, any chance of modeling what we should be paying with statute as far as the school bond indebtedness and also the capital program for rural villages, how that would match up with the urban and rural? That would be helpful.
Sure will.
Are there any other questions? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Both of these bills, at this point, we're going to set aside. And we're going to hear. I'd like to, just so everybody knows, our hearing schedule will be on Thursday, March 12th. Public testimony will begin at 1:30 to 3:30. It'll be limited to 2 minutes, and please sign in at your LIO or call in by 3 p.m. Testimony will take a break and reconvene at 5 p.m. So the recess will be from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. Public testimony will continue, again, limited to 2 minutes, and please sign in again at your LIO or call in before 7 p.m. Testimony may close early if there isn't anybody else that signs in.
Madam Chair, on these two bills?
On these two bills. actually on three bills, two bills, these two bills. Are there any questions? Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 11th at 9 a.m. We'll be discussing HB 127, HB 182, HB 30, HB 197, and HB 223. Is there anything anybody would like to bring up before we adjourn? I guess not. So we are now adjourned at 3:38 p.m.